in this. Abby has a boyfriend in Georgia named Nick, and he's pretty cute in pictures. Boyfriends don't seem to be a particularly complicated thing for Abby. Honestly, nothing seems really complicated for Abby. But Abby is my cousin, and she's amazing, and I'm happy for her. And I'm not jealous. Because that would be shitty. I don't want to be shitty. I yawn and rub my eyes, and then I tap out a reply. Why, hello, winky face. What's up? Moments later, her reply, a blushing smiley emoji. Definitely sex. I call her. Congratulations, I say as soon as she picks up. She laughs. Excuse me? How do you even know what I'm about to say? Because you're really obvious? I roll onto my side, cupping the phone to my ear. But I want you to tell me anyway. Now I'm embarrassed.
What? Why?
I don't know. She giggles softly. Ugh. Okay, let me make sure my dad's not creeping in the hallway.
Good idea, I say.
My Uncle Albert is insane when it comes to dating. Once he caught Abby holding hands with a guy, and she was grounded for a week.
Okay,
she says after a moment. All clear?
Yeah.
I hear her take a deep breath.
So...
And the weird thing is, I get this tense, almost nauseated feeling. I can't figure out why. I don't have a crush on Abby's boyfriend. I've never even met him. And it's not like I'm in any kind of suspense here. I know what she's about to tell me. She's about to tell me she had sex with Nick.
I had sex with Nick,
she says, her voice hushed. I knew it. She laughs.
Oh my God, I feel weird talking about this.
I can just picture her flop back on her bed, hand covering her face. Abby doesn't blush, kind of like Cassie. Though Abby has dark brown skin, so it's hard to tell. But her mouth does this tiny upward quirk in the corner when she's embarrassed or awkward or pleased with herself. I can actually hear it. I can hear that little mouth quirk in her voice.
How was it? I ask.
It was, you know, it was good.
But I don't know. I'm bad at this. I never know what to ask. Better than Daryl? She pauses.
Yeah,
she says finally.
Definitely.
Well, awesome.
You don't think I'm a slut, right?
What? No.
We've only been together 5 months. It's kind of slutty.
No, it's not, I say. Not at all.
I know, but, so there's this girl I know here, and she's the actual worst. Like, you need to hear her talk about her metabolism, which is apparently super fast, and apparently we all need to know this, and I don't even know why I listen to her. But anyway, she made this comment the other day that couples in high school shouldn't have sex until they've been dating for a year, and I can't get it out of my head, you know?
Oh, Abby, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Like, she didn't actually use the word slut, but I felt like it was implied, and now I'm just like, great, I'm a slut.
There's this catch in her voice, and I don't know what to say. I'm not really the expert on this. Here's what I would never, ever admit out loud. A part of me always thought it was some kind of a secret compliment when someone got called a slut. It meant you were having sex, which meant people wanted to have sex with you. Being a slut just meant you were normal. But I think maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe I'm so wrong. Abby, you are not a slut, I say firmly. Who is this girl? She's full of shit.
I know. I'm being ridiculous.
Olivia's had sex. Cassie's had all kinds of sex. You're fine. And it's not anyone else's business.
No, you're right.
So, tell me how it happened, I say. Like, tell me the whole story leading up to it.
Okay.
I hear rustling, and I picture her sitting up straighter.
So, we were actually at a concert. We saw the Weepies. Tell Cassie that. But anyway, afterward, we were hanging out at Simon's house, and we're watching TV, and then Nick gets a text from his mom.
I'm not seeing how this story ends in sex.
Ha! She was letting him know she was called into the hospital for work.
Oh. I can hear Abby grinning.
Yep. So then we left.
So you and Nick were home alone? I say. And?
And yeah.
Hey, well done.
Why, thank you.
She yawns happily.
So, what about you?
Did I have sex last night?
No,
she says.
Unless, I mean, did you?
If Abby were physically present right now, she'd be feeling the wrath of my side eye. She would so be feeling it. Oh, totally, I say. You know me.
Molly, I want to know what's going on with you. Hey, whatever happened with the sideburns guy?
From my SAT class?
Yes.
Crush number 25, Quinn of test prep. I never exchanged actual words with him, but I'm 80% sure that was his first name. Once, we shared a potentially significant moment of eye contact after finishing a math practice test. I have no idea. I hope he did well.
What do you mean?
On the SAT?
You are ridiculous.
I shrug, and even though she can't see me, it's like she can sense it through the cellular radio waves.
How come you never tell me about boys anymore?
There's literally nothing to tell. We hang up, and I scoot backward against my pillows, feeling off kilter. So, Abby had sex with Nick. That means she's had sex with two guys. I haven't even kissed two guys. Actually, I haven't even kissed one guy. I know it's not a competition, but I can't help but feel like I'm falling further and further behind. Of the four of us, Cassie, Abby, Olivia, and me, I'm the last virgin standing, which has been the case for a while now, and I don't know why it suddenly bothers me. But it's not about the sex, exactly. It's the other stuff. I can picture it. Abby and Nick hanging out after the concert, sleepy and content and surrounded by friends. Her feet in his lap. This text coming in. And the way all their friends must have teased them when they left so abruptly. I bet they looked sheepish. I bet they held hands the minute they stepped outside. I think that's what I'm jealous of. I'm jealous of the moment Nick slid his key into the lock. And I do not mean that as a euphemism. Just a key in the lock of an empty house. Just that sweet, anticipatory moment. I wonder what Abby was thinking and feeling at that exact second. I'd be wrecked with butterflies if it were me. Here's the truth. I want this so badly. To the point where it's almost physically painful sometimes. I want Olivia's soft-voiced conversations with Evan Schulmeister, where she takes 5 steps away from us before she even answers the phone, just to be alone with him. And I want the palpable waves of electric crush energy that radiate off Cassie these days. I want to know what it feels like to have crushes that could conceivably maybe one day turn into boyfriends. All this wanting. I pull out my phone. My mind is spinning. I need to zone out on BuzzFeed or something. I know this doesn't exactly make me unique, but I love the internet. I love it. I think the way I feel about the internet is the way some people feel about the ocean. It's so huge and unknowable, but also totally predictable. You type a line of symbols and click enter, and everything you want to happen happens. Not like real life, where all the wanting in the world can't make something exist. I don't even think Cassie has the ability to make this come true for me. It's just hard to believe in the concept of Molly with a boyfriend. Especially a cute hipster boyfriend. Especially Will. But I want it. The wanting is almost too big to hold. 5. Things feel more manageable in the morning. I don't know if it's the sunshine or the Zoloft or just the fact that I'm working today, but I feel completely energized. I'm even a little amped up. As soon as I get to Bissell, Deborah starts me off setting a tableau of baskets and things around a raw cedar coffee table. Here's a fact about me.
I'm excellent at arranging vintage stuff into rustic, artful displays. Abby calls me a Pinterest queen, which is a compliment, I think. I guess it's my one skill set. The storage room door nudges open, and Reed slips through, carrying a cardboard box. He sets it down on the counter and talks to Ari for a minute. And then he looks up at me and smiles and walks over.
Hey, Molly.
Oh, hey! I was wondering where you were. God, I don't know why I do this. 99% of the time, I'm amazing at shutting up. But every so often, it's like I lose my filter. And it comes without warning. I was wondering where you were. Way to sound like a happy little stalker on your second day of work, Molly. But Reed just smiles again and picks up a basket.
What are you working on?
Oh, Deborah wanted me to update this display.
Cool.
He ruffles his own hair, which is a pretty cute thing for a boy to do. And then he stands there for a minute, like he doesn't know what to say. Poor, awkward Middle Earth Reed. Though he's wearing what appears to be a Game of Thrones t-shirt today, so I guess he's House Lannister Reed now. The silence is a little painful. It's funny, because you always think the hard part is meeting someone the first time. It's not. It's the second time, because you've already used up all the obvious topics of conversation. And even if you haven't, it's strange and heavy-handed to introduce random conversational topics at this stage in the game. Hi, Reed. Let's converse about topics. How many siblings do you have? What books do you like? I mean, I could probably answer the book one. So what's your favorite thing for sale here? I blurt. Excellent conversational topic, Molly.
Oh, I'll show you,
Reed says. He starts walking toward the stationery corner, peeking over his shoulder to see if I'm following. So I follow. He goes straight for the greeting cards and pulls one off the display. A greeting card. This store is essentially Anthropologie's cooler, hotter big sister, and Reed's most cherished item is a greeting card. He hands it to me, and I hold it gently in both hands. And I have to admit, this is a pretty fancy greeting card. It's on heavy cardstock, intricately painted with a portrait of, I'm almost positive, Queen Elizabeth I. She's wearing this outfit with epic puff sleeves and a collar that basically looks like the sun, and she has the world's greatest don't fuck with me expression on her face. Underneath the portrait, in old-fashioned script, is the quote, I observe and remain silent. I read it aloud.
That's Elizabeth I,
Reed says. Oh, I thought so. I look up at him. That's a quote from her? He nods seriously.
As far as I know.
That's a really ominous card to send someone.
What?
He laughs. It's like, I'm watching your every move and I choose not to say anything. Yet. Look at her expression. I hold up the card.
No!
The faintest dimple appears in his cheek.
No, don't ruin Elizabeth for me. She is perfect.
Is she, Reed? Is she really? I flash him the Molly face. Everlasting skepticism.
Yes, she is. She is perfect.
Now he's looking at me, and I have to admit, his eyes are a cool shade of hazel. I don't know if his glasses kept me from noticing before, but now I'm noticing. Okay, I say, because I need to say something. So is this, like, a romantic thing, or... His head whips toward me.
What?
I hold up the card. You and Elizabeth?
Very funny.
He plucks it out of my hand, smiling. So that's a yes. It's the strangest thing. I am not like this. I mean, I am around my family, but not around boys. I've never really joked around with a boy like this before. Not where I was the one making the jokes. I think I like it.
We should look busy,
Reed says suddenly, glancing over his shoulder. I follow his gaze, catching Deborah's eye. She smiles and waves, and I feel my cheeks go warm.
Crap. Yeah, job. Work.
We can rearrange stuff in the baby section again,
Reed says. Okay.
It's kind of like...
He lowers his voice, glancing briefly at Deborah again.
There's not always a lot to do here. I guess it depends on the day.
Ah. I fall into step beside him, walking toward the baby section, which is essentially Pinterest come to life. The ceiling is draped with softly patterned pastel bunting, and there are hanging hot air balloon decorations, not for sale, and impossibly soft stuffed animals, for sale, and everything is organic. Reed turns to me suddenly.
You're not going to quit, though, right?
What?
I shouldn't have said anything.
About there not being a lot of work to do here? He bites his lip. I love not doing work, I assure him. And it's true. Not doing much work is my favorite thing. And my other favorite things include being around a lot of mason jars, rearranging table displays, and teasing geeky boys about their fondness for historical queens.
Well, good.
I smile.
Otherwise, I was going to have to bribe you with mini eggs,
he adds. Wait, really?
Absolutely. Too late, though. That's a shame.
I give him a glare, and his dimple flickers. And hey, looks like House Lannister Reed knows about jokes after all. Here's the funny part. All the way home, I replay this conversation with Reed in my head. I don't even realize I'm doing it until I arrive at my own doorstep. Admittedly, this is the kind of thing a person might do while establishing her 27th crush, hypothetically speaking. But Reed isn't a crush. I don't know how to explain it, but a crush is a very particular thing for me. Like crush number 8, Sean of the eyelashes. It was the second to last night of camp, the summer after 8th grade, and it was raining, so we were all watching Wet Hot American Summer in the lodge. By coincidence, or fate, it felt like fate, Sean was sitting next to me. I found him massively cute, kind of short, with spiky dark hair and bright blue eyes. And the eyelashes. At least 75% of Sean's body weight was eyelashes. He was sitting in one of those folding nylon camp chairs, and at one point, he leaned toward me out of nowhere to say, "This movie rules." I agreed with this statement, and at the time, that felt cosmically significant. I could barely catch my breath for the rest of the movie, and my heartbeat was probably making those gigantic zigzags. Literally, all my mental energy was devoted to trying to come up with something clever and nonchalant to say to this boy. This perfect boy, whom I'd noticed around camp for weeks, who was now miraculously sitting beside me, and who had, even more miraculously, spoken to me first. But I was suddenly frozen and electrically self-conscious. My thighs felt enormous, and I was acutely aware of the waistband of my shorts digging into the fat on my stomach. It occurred to me that Sean, of course I already knew his name, wouldn't be talking to me if he knew about the shorts and the fat and the waistband. So I just stared at the movie screen, not really watching it. But when the movie was over, Sean nudged me and said, "That was really cool, right?" I smiled and nodded really fast. I never talked to him again. I haven't even thought about him in years. But as I climb the stairs to my bedroom, his face is vividly clear to me, and the mental image of him still makes my heart race. Molly Peskin-Suso, crushing on the memory of 8th grade boys. Am I the biggest creeper in the universe? Check yes or hell yes. I sink onto my bed. So, there was Sean. And Julian Portillo, my friend Elena's older brother. Crush number 11, Julian of the experimental breakfasts. That's the main thing I remember. The way he used to make these very complicated gourmet breakfasts for us in the mornings after our sleepovers. I guess I found that really charming for some reason, even though I am not a person who experiments with breakfast. Anyway, Julian was a senior when Elena and I were freshmen, and their parents were from El Salvador, and they both had giant dimples in both cheeks. Julian had a really loud laugh, too. I kept a diary back then, and I took note of every single time he spoke to me, which was rare.
mostly because I lost the ability to speak when he was around. And I guess cute senior boys don't like speaking to walls of awkward freshman silence. Anyway, Julian ended up at Georgetown, and Elena got a scholarship to private school, and neither of them is on Facebook, so I have no idea what they're up to now. Not a clue. But the point is, I can't talk to guys I like. Not really. My body completely betrays me. And it's a little different with every guy, so it's kind of hard to generalize. But if I had to describe the feeling of a crush, I'd say this. You just finished running a mile, and you have to throw up, and you're starving, but no food seems appealing, and your brain becomes fog, and you also have to pee. It's this close to intolerable. But I like it. More than like it. I crave it. Because there's nausea and fog, but there's also this. An unshakable feeling that something wonderful is about to happen. That's the part I can't explain. No matter how unlikely, I always have a secret shred of hope. And as feelings go, that's a pretty addictive one. 6. Cassie busts into my room at 6 in the morning without knocking.
Yo, sleepyhead, where's your stringing?
Olivia needs beat therapy. I blink up at her. Now?
She's on her way over. Some kind of Evan douchery.
Right. So here's a confession. I've never entirely understood the appeal of Evan Schulmeister. This is not just me being jealous that Olivia has a boyfriend. I think Evan's an acquired taste, but without the part where I actually acquire the taste.
Should I get dressed?
Cassie laughs.
For Olivia?
Pajamas it is. 20 minutes later, we're cross-legged on the front porch, surrounded by magazines and scraps and scissors. I'm bleary-eyed, but it's cool and breezy and actually kind of nice. I think the whole neighborhood is still sleeping.
So, what did that dumb fuck do this time?
Asked Cassie.
He's not a dumb fuck.
Olivia fidgets with a bead, tugging it up and along the string. This is a thing she and I have been working on for years. Our bead strings. Mine is over 10 feet long now, maybe thousands of beads, and every single bead is homemade, cut from magazine pages. All you do is cut triangles out of paper and roll them tightly around a coffee straw, starting with a wide point. Seal it with glue and maybe a layer of clear nail polish. Then you slide them onto your string and repeat. Mine's kind of an ombre rainbow pattern, starting with red, but I've worked my way up through the indigo section. Almost ready for violet. When it's done, I'm going to line it along the top edge of my bedroom wall so it drapes down like lace.
So, okay, this isn't even a big deal, Olivia says. It's just something he said that's kind of been bugging me.
Not a big deal, Cassie asks. Olivia shrugs, smoothing glue over the end of a bead. Cassie grins.
You texted me at 5:30 in the morning. Ugh, I'm sorry. I'm being ridiculous.
Livy, you're not being ridiculous. Cassie scoots closer and hooks her arm around her.
I just don't like seeing you sad. I'm not sad. I'm just...
Olivia looks down at the finished bead nestled in the palm of her hand. That's really pretty, I say.
Thanks. Yeah. Anyway, it was just Evan being weird. He was asking me a bunch of questions about waxing.
What?
Like, Brazilian bikini waxing?
Okay. Cassie raises her eyebrows.
Yeah, it was out of nowhere, and he kept saying he was just curious about it, and I was finally like, are you trying to tell me something?
She pauses to slide her bead onto her string.
And he says, no, of course not, why do you think that?
Cassie sighs.
Jesus Christ. I don't know.
Olivia smiles tightly.
I really think he was just curious.
Pretty sure he's trying to police your vagina.
I mean, he didn't ask me to, like, get waxed.
Cassie laughs.
I'd say he hinted pretty strongly.
Fuck that, though. That is so not his call. It occurs to me, suddenly, that I've been staring at the same magazine page for the last 5 minutes. And it's not even the right color scheme. I feel slightly on edge.
I just honestly hate this kind of conversation. It's not that bikini waxing is a foreign concept to me, but, I mean, I guess it kind of is. Like, it's one of those girl habits that's so far beyond me, it makes me feel like a different species. Do boys require hairless vaginas? Is this a known thing? Of course, the magazine I'm holding makes me think so. Not that there's a big hairless vagina in my face, but it's one of those models with perfect shadowy cleavage. How did I get their cleavage to do that? I'm pretty sure I could drive a boat through my boobs, they're so far apart. I guess it's just this feeling that my body is secretly all wrong. Which means any guy who assumes I'm normal is going to flip his shit if we get to the point of nakedness. Whoa, nope, not what I signed up for. It makes me never want to be naked. And it's not like I could be a never nude. I don't even like jean shorts. Am I right? Cassie asks. I look up and realize they're both looking at me. Yes, I say, which is probably a safe answer. Cassie usually is right. I don't know. Olivia shakes her head. Like, I don't even mind the idea of it or whatever. I just don't want it to be a thing. I hate confrontations. Clearly. Olivia smiles shyly. What do you mean? Well, you just confirmed that you would literally rather get the hair ripped off of your vagina than deal with confrontation. Oh, she says. I guess so. That is... Nope, just give me your phone. Cassie makes a grab for it. Cassie? Are you texting him? I ask. I'm just letting him know, she starts typing, that Olivia would be happy to get waxed if he's willing to wax his tiny, microscopic little peen at the same time. What? Olivia makes a violent grab for the phone. Don't you dare hit send. Cassie leans back on her elbows, laughing. There's that fighting spirit. Fuck you, Olivia says, grinning down at her phone. Immediately, my phone buzzes in my pocket. Text from Olivia. Love my hairy vag. Vag for the win. Go wax your butthole, please, Schulmeister. I snicker, tilting my phone toward Olivia. Oops, I think this text was meant for Evan. Should I forward it to him? I hate you both, Olivia says, halfway between a laugh and a scowl. We burn out on beads after an hour or so. And by that, I mean Cassie burns out and starts dumping the magazines back into their reusable grocery bags. But I really think the bead therapy helped. By the time Olivia leaves, she's her unruffled self, even if the situation still has Cassie amped up. What was that about? Nadine asks when we walk into the living room. She's nursing Zave on the couch. Cassie sinks down beside her. You don't want to know. Is Olivia okay? I was just talking to her mama. Sounds like she's looking at art programs. That's definitely not what we were talking about, says Cassie. Evan's being a shitbag again, I say, and Cassie beams down at me like a proud parent. Must be the word shitbag. Cassie loves compound curse words. Schulmeister, Nadine says. What did that little fuckwipe do now? Come to think of it, Nadine loves compound curse words too. Cassie tells her the whole thing, and you can tell Nadine loves every moment of this. I don't think there's a single thing on earth that brings more joy to Nadine than throwing shade at Evan Schulmeister. She's never liked him. Ever since he asked if Cassie was actually queer or if she was trying to emulate our moms. He actually used the word emulate. I don't even want to remember that particular stretch of awkward silence. Actually, I do. It was kind of amazing. But my mind keeps drifting back to the way I felt this morning on the porch. There's so much I don't know about. And everyone else seems like they were born knowing. Things like waxing and birth control. I know the mechanics, obviously, but how does it play out in real life? Who brings the condom? Can anyone buy condoms? Can you use the self-checkout U-scan so there's no eye contact involved? Except, oh God, what if the machine announces it? Condoms, $12.99. Please place your giant box of condoms in the bag. Oh, but your value pack of condoms is too big for our sensors. Please wait and someone will assist you shortly. Why are you so red, Momo? Nadine asks. Whoa, Molly, hey, get your shit together.
I guess I shouldn't worry about this until I've actually, you know, kissed a guy.
7. On Wednesday, I somehow end up in the backseat of Mina's ancient but immaculate Lexus.
I can't believe this is your car, Cassie says. I mean, it's so cool that you even have a car.
It was my grandma's, says Mina.
Our grandma's not supposed to drive anymore, Cassie says. Because she hit someone.
Mina gasps.
Are you serious?
Dead serious. I was with her. I mean, she was going really slowly and the guy was totally okay. But she cursed him out and called him a bitch.
Mina laughs.
I have to meet this woman.
She's visiting next week, I say.
You should come over.
Okay, no, Cassie says. Mina does not need to meet Grandma. That is a solid nope.
She grins, and I look at her, curled up in the passenger seat, her whole body turned toward Mina. She's like a flower tilting toward the sun.
So, Molly, can I ask you something?
Mina says, after a moment, eyes flicking up to meet mine in the rearview mirror.
Sure.
Cass says you've had crushes on 25 guys.
26, Cassie corrects immediately.
But you haven't dated any of them? Mina asks.
No,
I say. I feel the usual prickle of self-consciousness. But when Mina glances at me again, her expression is sweetly curious.
Is there a story behind that?
There's no story. It just never...
I lean back against the seat, squeezing my eyes shut. I have this sudden memory of middle school. There was this table of boys in the cafeteria who would yell, "Boy, oing, oing," when hot girls walked by. Except when I walked by, they made a womp, womp, womp sound, like a boner going limp. I remember feeling frozen. Cassie was screaming at them, and I couldn't catch my breath. I thought I was dying. My first panic attack. I mean, here's the thing I don't get. How do people come to expect that their crushes will be reciprocated? Like, how does that get to be your default assumption?
Well, she doesn't put herself out there, Cassie says. Like, at all. So Molly's never actually been rejected either.
And I'm okay with that, I say. Cassie snorts. I stare out the window. Bethesda looks so different from Tacoma Park. Everything's a little quieter and fancier, and there are definitely fewer mixed-media art installations in people's front yards. But it's nice here. Some of the houses are really, really big.
Well, what kind of guys do you like?
Mina says, slowing for a stop sign.
Other than Will?
Jesus Christ, hipster Will. I never actually said I liked him. I don't even know if I do. I've met him once.
Oh, she likes all kinds of guys. Molly's a crush machine, Cassie says. Let's see, Noah Bates, Jacob Schneider, Jorge Gutierrez, that guy Brent from Hebrew school, the eyelash kid from camp, Josh Barker, Julian Portillo, the short guy from pre-calc, the student teacher, Vihan Gupta, and Olivia's little cousin.
Okay, I did not know he was 13.
Cassie grins. Oh, and Lin-Manuel Miranda. That's a major one.
Oh, really?
Mina says, beaming at me in the mirror.
Me too.
Yeah, well, just so you know, he's Molly's currently reigning crush number 26, so this may end in a fight.
I stretch forward to smack Cassie, maybe harder than I need to. Or a duel, she adds under her breath, and Mina bursts out laughing. I close my eyes again. Mina and Cassie are murmuring softly now, about something unrelated to my wasteland of a love life. So that's good. I let my mind wander, but it keeps snagging on a single point. Molly's never actually been rejected.
I just hadn't really thought about it like that before. But it's true. I've never been rejected. Not directly. I've never given anyone the opportunity.
I've never rejected anyone either.
And maybe that's even weirder than the fact that I haven't kissed anyone. At the very least, I'm pretty sure these things are all related.
Somehow. Cassie nudges me suddenly.
Hey, we're here.
I let my eyes slide open.
Mina's house is brick and medium-sized, with a super gorgeous front yard. You can tell they planned in advance where the bushes would go. Mina parks in the driveway, and Cassie and I follow her down this little path to the front door. Her parents are at work. She slides a key into the lock. Immediate first impression? Everything in Mina's house looks like it's there on purpose. The walls are white, with framed family pictures placed almost symmetrically. The windows are huge and clean, so everything feels really sunny. Also, everywhere I look, there's art. Paintings and sculptures and even the light fixtures. Lots of animals, especially tigers. Some realistic, but mostly stylized. And it's the perfect mix of cute and badass. I kind of want to pin this whole house to my design board. A painting in the hallway catches my eye. Maybe my favorite one yet. Your parents must really love tigers, I say.
Oh, that's like a Korean thing,
Mina says. Oh, geez, I'm sorry.
Why are you sorry?
Okay, this is really cute, Cassie interjects. She taps the edge of a canvas-wrapped photo of Mina hugging the life force out of some goat in a petting zoo.
Oh, God, says Mina.
I love it. Cassie steps closer, and then their fingertips almost touch. Not quite. Makes me wonder. Mina clears her throat.
So the boys are on their way, but we can head down to the basement. I'll leave the door open for them.
The boys? She gives me this painfully knowing smile.
Will and Max?
Oh, I blush. We follow Mina downstairs. The basement is enormous. I don't think Tacoma Park has basements like this. She walks us through it, and it's a whole other floor of the house. There's a bedroom with its own bathroom, a little mini kitchen, and an actual sauna. But the main room of the basement is a TV room with a giant flat screen and the mushiest denim couches I've ever encountered. As soon as I sit down, I can actually feel my butt leaving an imprint. I never want to stand up.
Can I get you guys something to drink?
Mina tucks back a strand of hair and adjusts her glasses, and she honestly seems kind of jittery. Maybe it's weird for her, having us here. We both say no, so Mina ends up perching on the armrest of the love seat next to Cassie. And there's this extra drawn-out pause. I take one of those deep, cleansing yoga breaths Patty is so obsessed with. Slow inhale through the nose, controlled exhale through the mouth. I think it's supposed to help with childbirth, but it actually helps me now. Goal, don't be weird and awkward.
So, how do you know Will and Max? Cassie asks. Are they exes, or...
Oh, God, no. Not like that. I've known them both forever.
That's like us and Olivia, I say.
Oh, yeah. She's the tall girl with the blue hair, right? Cute, kind of curvy.
Yep, Cassie says. But I can't help but wince. Like, yes, Olivia is kind of curvy, and Mina didn't say it like an insult. I know it's not an insult. But I just hate when people talk about bodies. Because if Mina thinks Olivia's body is noticeably curvy, I'd like to know what she thinks about mine. No, actually, I would not like to know.
Oh, Cassie says. Olivia wanted me to tell you that she's really sorry she can't make it. She's working.
Aw, where does she work?
One of those pottery painting places. Super Olivia-ish, Cassie says, and Mina nods. Distantly, I hear the front door open, and someone yells,
Hello? We're in the basement,
Mina calls. The door thuds shut, and there are footsteps on the stairs. I'm definitely nervous to see the guys again. Not because I have a crush on Will. It's just that they're both so inaccessibly cool. And when they step into the room, it's immediately confirmed. There's just something about them that looks completely right. Like, they're in the right bodies. Max is vaguely muscular, in an understated way, and his anime boy bangs are actually kind of nice today. Maybe. And Will basically looks like he was born inside an American Apparel. He's wearing an old Ben's Chili Bowl t-shirt and jeans, and he still manages to look stupidly perfect. I think that's what I want, to look stupidly perfect in a t-shirt. Also, Will is holding a beer. There's a throw pillow next to me.
I pick it up and hug it tightly.
You guys all remember each other, right? Will Haley, Max McCone, and this is Cassie and Molly Peskin-Suso.
What the what?
Asks Will. It's hyphenated, Cassie says. She looks up at them. You brought beer?
We stole it,
Will says. And I guess I must look scandalized because he turns to me and winks.
Just from upstairs. Mina's dad has a beer fridge in the garage.
I can't believe your parents just let you take beer whenever you want.
No, but my dad is really unobservant, so...
I want unobservant parents with a beer fridge, Cassie sighs. Mina grins.
It's actually a kimchi fridge. And all the normal food goes in the kitchen,
adds Max.
Oh, really?
Asks Mina.
Care to explain why kimchi isn't normal food?
Max is like the verbal equivalent of a bull in a china shop,
Will explains, settling in beside me on the couch. I can't resist sneaking a peek at him. His rumpled mess of red hair and sleepy blue eyes. He leans back and stretches, and his shirt rides all the way up, exposing his stomach, pale and flat, and dusted with light hair. I need to stop blushing. Especially because Max and Will are now exchanging what appears to be a very meaningful glance. If it is a glance about me, I will die. We are amused by the sad, chubby girl who is clearly enchanted by our hipster beauty. Seriously, I will die. I'm probably paranoid, but now I can't stop thinking about this. I get locked into this cycle sometimes. I develop counter-arguments in my head. Actually, gentlemen, I'm intrigued, not enchanted, and I'm anxious, not sad. And if you call yourself a hipster, guess what? You're not a hipster. Of course, it's possible the meaningful glance was about beer. Cassie sits up straight. Will, I hear you're an artist.
I do photography.
That counts. Cassie smiles. Molly's really artistic, too.
Oh, God.
Hey, that's awesome. What do you do?
Will slides off the couch and settles onto the carpet, cross-legged, smiling up at me. I feel like a kindergarten teacher. If kindergartners drank beer. What do you mean? I ask.
What kind of art?
I shake my head quickly. I'm not artistic. I just like crafts.
She makes jewelry,
Mina says. Okay, they need to fucking stop. This is so mortifyingly transparent. Hey, Will, look at all the stuff Molly has in common with you. Except she actually doesn't have anything in common with you. She just thinks you're hot. That's not art, I mutter, burying my face in the throw pillow. She did all this Pinterest shit for our brother's first birthday party last month, Cassie says. It was so cute, and she does all the decorations for our birthday parties. She did the centerpieces for our Binat mitzvah.
Is that like a bat mitzvah?
Mina asks. Yeah, like a double bat mitzvah. Or in our case, a barf mitzvah. Mina laughs.
What? Ooh, I'd like to hear this,
Will says. Cassie's eyes flick to me, and she looks suddenly sheepish. Like it just occurred to her that sharing the details of my vomitous past might not help the cause. Something tells me Will won't consider it a turn-on. But it's too late. He's staring up at her, rapt. Molly, do you want to tell it? I'm not telling it. I hug my knees. Cassie shrugs. Okay, so we're up at the Bima, and the rabbi's holding the Torah, and Molly and I are supposed to undress it.
Whoa,
Will says, and he and Max smile at each other. What?
That's what they call it. Undressing the Torah?
Oh my God, guys, please stop.
Mina shakes her head.
You're being offensive.
I'm just asking.
Anyway, Cassie says. The rabbi starts taking off the breastplate and the top thingies, and Molly's just standing there, looking, like, dead white. Like, what's his name? The vampire.
Edward Cullen,
I say. Yes, Edward Cullen. And I'm whispering, like, Molly, we're supposed to be undressing the Torah, and she's like, I don't feel good.
Oh, no,
Mina says, hand over her heart. But I'm like,
okay, well, this is literally our bat mitzvah, so you're going to have to suck it up. And then I hand her the pointer. I remember this perfectly. The way the tip of the yad looked like a hand, with a tiny little metallic pointer finger. I used to think the yad was adorable. But when Cassie extended it toward me in that moment, it felt like an accusation. You, Molly, you. I remember the sudden sensation of bile burning the back of my throat, the tidal wave in my stomach. And she's like... Cassie clutches her stomach, making gagging noises. And she jets out of there. She runs down the stairs and out the side door, and everyone's like, oh, holy shit. It's totally silent. And then you could just hear these insane puking sounds going on for like 20 minutes. Okay, it was not 20 minutes. Seriously, this is how Cassie's going to convince Will to make out with me. It was 20 minutes, and at first we're all like, oh shit, she barfed in the lobby of the synagogue, because, you know, we can hear it. Oh God, Mina says. But then, Cassie raises a finger. I remember. She taps her collarbone. We're wearing microphones.
No. Oh, Molly. Mina looks at me. Oh my God, that is just... I'm sorry, but can I hug you?
I nod, and she actually slides down from her perch on the love seat. She actually hugs me.
That sucks, she says. I'm so sorry.
And then I chanted my entire Torah portion without missing a single syllable, Cassie announces smugly.
Yeah, well, I wrinkle my nose at her. You know what I love about Jewish people?
Max says. He looks so different when he smiles. His face lights up entirely.
Mina side-eyes him. What? I love that you have your bar mitzvah in front of your parents and grandparents and everyone, and like, that's the Jewish version of becoming a woman.
He leans forward, grinning.
But in my religion...
You are not religious, Mina says.
In my religion,
he repeats emphatically,
you become a woman by...
He forms an O with his left hand and pokes through it with his right pointer finger, again and again and again.
Jesus Christ, Max, stop it. I'm serious.
Mina stands up. Yeah, that's pretty fucking problematic, Cassie says calmly.
What?
Max looks wounded.
How is that problematic? The Jewish thing?
Let's start with the implication that becoming a woman has anything to do with whether or not you've had sex. I have to admit, my sister is a badass. She just doesn't get intimidated by people. I don't know how to be like that.
Oh, jeez. Okay, I was kidding.
Max sighs. And you know what? I'm pretty much done with this whole construct of virginity. Cassie does air quotes. Which I'm sure you think applies to hetero-vaginal sex.
You think a person can lose their virginity from oral sex?
Yes, Cassie says.
Max, seriously.
Mina glares down at him.
Okay, but don't you think it depends on the couple?
Will chimes in.
It's like a case-by-case thing. Like, if oral is the end game for a particular couple, then yeah. But if it's like a hetero guy and girl, I think there would have to be penetration.
But why? Cassie leans forward. Why would that be considered more intimate than oral? Like, why do you get to decide what makes something intimate? I lean back against the cushions and tuck my feet up under my thighs. It's even worse than the bikini wax conversation. I feel so out of my league. I don't know. This is not the kind of sex talk I'm used to having. I'm not saying the concepts are new to me. I mean, Patty's a midwife, and she can get very specific about these things. But that's strictly informational mom stuff. And when Abby talks about sex, it's about the feelings, not the orifices. But I feel like we're jumping straight into orifices. Will nudges me.
What do you think?
And the whole room goes silent. At least, that's how it feels. I mean, he has to know I'm the last person he should be consulting about this. I'm pretty much the latest blooming icon of teen purity to ever exist outside a Judd Apatow movie. Literally, the only penetration in my life involves monofilament cord and paper beads.
To be honest, I am Queen Elizabeth. I'm the Virgin Queen. And I think I know how she'd handle this conversation. She would observe and remain silent. Of course, Elizabeth probably didn't have a room full of hipster sex gods staring her down.
I mean, I think people have this mentality that sex is only real if it involves a penis, Cassie says finally.
Oh my God, Mina sighs. Thank you. This is like my soapbox.
She and Cassie beam at each other.
And on that note,
Will announces loudly,
I'm getting another beer.
He springs up from the carpet, and Mina murmurs something to Cassie under her breath. Then Cassie laughs and whispers something back to Mina. And for a minute, I'm just sitting there, across from Max, who glances up at me for a moment, before deciding his phone is more interesting than I am. So maybe Max is one of those guys who only wants to befriend girls he thinks are hot. See also guys who wear fedoras. See also guys who say, no fatties. Though maybe I'm being too sensitive. Cassie tells me this a lot. Anyway, I feel a little better when Will slides back onto the couch beside me, lips pressed against the rim of his beer bottle like he's kissing it. He takes a quick sip, tilts his head toward me.
So, have you ever thought about doing photography?
Oh, not really. Molly, you totally should, Cassie says. You know, you guys should hang out and work on a project together or something.
Oh my God. I feel sick. I actually feel sick. My sister is the least subtle person on the planet. This is so much worse than the Barf Mitzvah story. I don't care about the Barf Mitzvah story. But this... He's going to think I want to hook up with him. That I'm in love with him. That I'm obsessed with him. And I'm sorry, but there's a reason I'm so careful. Boys like Will don't like girls like me. And if they find out we like them, they are always cruel. Always. I need to breathe.
In through the nose, out through the mouth.
So you have to hear the new Florence and the Machine album, Mina says. I have it upstairs on my laptop. It's so great. Max looks up. Suddenly, turning to Will.
Dude, we gotta go. Come on. Wait, what? I want to hear Florence. I'm sure it's on YouTube,
Max says.
And I'm your ride, so... You're a dickhole, McCone.
Max shakes his keys, and then, to my utter surprise, he turns to me with one of those face-lighting smiles.
Need a ride to the metro, Molly?
So maybe I was wrong about the fedora and the no fatties. Yeah, thank you. That would be really great. I look at Cassie. Cass, you ready? There's this pause. I'm gonna stay and hear that album. Is that okay? I feel a tiny twinge low in my chest.
Yeah,
totally. I pause. So, do you want me to stay, or...
Oh, no, it's fine, Cassie says quickly. You should go.
Mina nods.
I can drop Cassie off after.
Oh. I think this is how it happens.
Okay, yeah,
I say again, trying to sound casual. Suddenly, there's this pressure building behind my eyes. But it's probably just excitement or adrenaline because I'm not a shitty person. If my sister wants to make out with this girl, I would like this make out to proceed as planned. And if it means I have to ride the metro with two cute boys, so be it. I should be excited about this, right? Not one, two. Two cute hipster boys. Max leads the way upstairs, and already I know what this ride will be like. The boys will be jokey and knowing and familiar, and I will lose myself to shyness. I will be the ice cube. Will isn't drunk, exactly, but he's sort of loose and happy. He curses Max out for making him leave, but you can tell he's not actually mad at all. Whereas Max just looks amused all the way to his car.
So where do you have to be so fucking urgently?
Will asks, sliding into the passenger seat. I tuck into the back seat, shutting the door quietly behind me. A part of me wonders if they remember I'm here.
Seatbelt,
Max says. Will clicks the seatbelt on.
If you're not buckled, we're not moving.
Max explains, twisting around to check my status. I'm buckled. I show him. Kind of funny and endearing, actually. Max is the last person I'd expect to care about seatbelts. I'm not sure I understand him. I definitely don't understand these two as a unit. At first, I thought Will was essentially the alpha guy, since he talks more. But now, I don't know. Because Max has this intensity. It makes me kind of nervous.
You didn't answer my question,
Will says, poking Max's arm.
I don't have to be anywhere. I'm just following orders.
He passes Will his phone.
Oh, shit,
Will says. Max laughs. And I feel like I'm missing something. Are they hooking up? I ask slowly.
Well, Mina asked us to clear out, so...
Max says. He starts the car and glances at me in the mirror.
Red line okay?
That's great. Thanks. My head is kind of spinning. So Mina planned this. I guess she texted Max when we were all in the room together. And now the boys and I have been exiled. She and Cassie are probably making out right now. Literally right now. And because I'm not a shitty person, I'm 100% thrilled. 8. And now Cassie's being mysterious, and it's really fucking weird. Normally, when she hooks up with someone, she's bursting with the details. She's a kiss and teller. Maybe that's awful, but it's just a part of the hookup process for her. She told me once that a kiss isn't a kiss until she tells me about it. Me, specifically. I loved hearing that. And I guess I'm the same way with my crushes. Talking about them with Cassie makes them real. But there's something happening, and I swear I'm not imagining it. Ever since Wednesday, she's been so twinkly, smiling out of nowhere and listening to that Florence album constantly. But she hasn't mentioned Mina. At all. And it feels wrong asking for details. I've never had to ask before. Then I wake up on Friday to Cassie's face staring down at me. Oh my God, I say, sitting up abruptly. Wake up! Let's make breakfast. I rub my eyelids and sweep my bangs off my face. Give me 1 second. She counts to 1. If she wasn't my twin, I'd swear she was 9 years old. I have literally never seen her so bright-eyed. Her hair is pulled up high on her head, and she's wearing pink pajama pants. And I'd expect this level of bubbliness from Abby. From Cassie, it's just weird. I follow her to the kitchen, trying to be quiet on the stairs. Our house is this 102-year-old bungalow, and when you're trying not to wake your moms, it's essentially a giant booby trap. Creaky doors, creaky stairs, creaky everything, and a sleep-averse little brother with supernaturally good hearing. Cassie's an awful cook, so I take the lead. I have to admit, I like being needed. She hooks her phone up to our little speaker, and there's that Florence and the Machine album again. But she won't say Mina's name. She just keeps opening and shutting cabinets, moving between the kitchen and dining room, setting out plates and folding napkins, all in this happy kind of daze. And yes, it's but early, and maybe she's just zoned out. But still, she should not leave me hanging. This is a flagrant violation of every code of twinship. I'm just about to swallow my pride and become, as Abby calls it, Mademoiselle nosy as fuck, except then Xavier ruins everything by waking up in a burst of full-volume babble. Our mom's room is above the dining room, so we can hear thudding footsteps and murmuring and the bathroom door shutting. Nadine always starts the day by nursing Zave, so Patty's the first to come down. And it's funny. Patty's as wild-eyed as Cassie. For a moment, I wonder if Cassie talked to her first. But she wouldn't. She would never. I'm the person Cassie talks to about girls. I mean, I'm the one Cassie talks to about everything. I think. That smells amazing, Patty says, smoothing my hair. Nadine walks in with Xavier a moment later.
Holy mother of deliciousness, what is this?
Proof that we have the best kids in the universe. Nadine hands Xavier off to Patty, beaming.
So you guys saw the news.